KLYT Broadcast Studios, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
I absolutely love shows like we have today. I have Lindsay DeCleva and Lauren Maddock in studio. They're with Magnified Dance Ensemble, and they have a brand new show coming out here on April 9th and 10th. Tell us about it, ladies. How are you?
We're doing good. Thanks so much for having us.
Well, both of you are dancers. Both of you have a storied history of dancing. And I hope our moms are listening. Maybe the grandmothers are listening. This is just an extra special thing. It's a way that you are able to share the gospel of Jesus. Your new show mm-hmm. is called How Love Wins. Of course, we've talked about Christmas joy and what you've done. Lindsay, yeah. you were on the show back in November talking about that upcoming performance.
Yeah.
So let's get you all started. Tell us about the new show.
Yeah, so this show, How Love Wins, is just kind of a continuation, a sequel of Christmas Joy. So Christmas Joy focuses on, you know, the birth of Jesus and the celebration of that season, and How Love Wins takes it a step further. And so we're looking at, you know, the birth of Jesus through his life, his death, his resurrection, and just sharing really the whole gospel story through our dancing.
And you're both dancing in it, Lauren?
Yes, both me and Lindsay are in it, as well as we've done rehearsal directing and helping with the other dancers as well, preparing for the show in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. And you're both dance instructors with Magnified Dance?
We are, yep.
So yeah. a lot of these students are your students that have auditioned and tried out, and mm-hmm. what a neat ministry.
It's really awesome getting to see them, you know, grow each year and starting at a young age, just, you know, having them grow through our program, through our company. It's a really special thing to get to be a part of.
So where and when is How Love Wins?
Yeah, so How Love Wins is at the National Hispanic Cultural Center, taking place on Saturday, April 9th and Sunday, April 10th. We're having a matinee show each day at 2 p.m., and you can get tickets through the box office there. We've got discounts for students and seniors and groups. It's going to be a good time.
And you can go right to NHCCNM for the National Hispanic Cultural Center of New Mexico, or you can call 505-724-4771. Did you both grow up dancing?
Yes.
Yeah, we did.
Both of us. Totally. I started when I was 3, just putting in it kind of as a hobby when you're a kid. Let's test this out. And then fell in love with it, stuck with it ever since. Mm-hmm. I joined with Magnify and those instructors when I was about 12. And
now, really, were they Magnify then, or was it still Allwins and Performers?
Still Allwins and Performers when I joined under Miss Karen. And Wendy Miner was artistic director at the time. Now it's shifted, but all of the same values, coaching, demanding of excellence, all those things have remained the same. And I can't imagine kind of growing up without it. It's wonderful.
Talk to us about your dancers, because they're as young as how old?
Yeah, so the dancers in our school start as young as 2 or 3 years old. So, you know, we've got little ones that come in and start with us. And then in Christmas Joy, our youngest angels are around 5 or 6. And then in How Love Wins, we have more of our senior members of the company taking place or participating in this show. So, you know, I'd say like 8 years old is probably the youngest in this production.
They're your senior members.
They are. I know, it's kind of crazy when you think about it, but yeah, we have just a slightly older cast because of the content and, you know, just themes of this show.
Okay, before we started today, and I shared with you, my daughter danced in Christmas Joy a number of years, and she never attained the level that you both have attained. Mm-hmm. Lindsay, you've danced professionally.
I have, yeah.
And that's got to take a toll on your body.
I mean,
a lot of people don't understand the athleticism mm-hmm. that's required.
Yeah.
Talk to us about your journey a little bit as in dance.
Sure.
And the different, I don't know, what levels that you attain.
Yeah. So I started at a young age as well, about 3 or 4, like Lauren, and participated in young classes. And then I took a small break. I wanted to try soccer and delve into other athletics and learned very quickly that those were not my areas of gifting. So I came back to dancing and went to Allwins, trained under Karen Allwin, Wendy Miner for a number of years, and performed in Christmas Joy for about a decade. And then at the end of that time, so my senior year of high school was actually the inaugural year of How Love Wins. So the production was conceived and choreographed by Wendy Miner in 2014. And so that was my last year, you know, as a member of the company. And I got to be a part of that, you know, first year of that show. And then from there I went on, I danced in California. I danced with Kansas City Ballet. I performed with a faith-based modern company in Houston, Texas. And then found my way back to Albuquerque to, you know, be a faculty teacher and guest artist with Magnify and, Ensemble. So it's been quite a journey. But I'm really grateful to have found my way back to Albuquerque and to get to participate in the show.
You know, I can see your passion, Lindsay, obviously. And Lauren, I just met you today, and I've known Lindsay for about an hour longer than I've known you. She was on the show back in November.
Yep.
But what's funny about this is that I don't think people really understand when you talk about training.
Hmm.
I think there might be some parents go, oh, well, if you're going to demand my child go to dance class this often, or, and you might share how often that is, mm-hmm. and you're going to demand this of them, that might be kind of hard on them. But the truth is that you both love the discipline that you learned in dance.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think it's also our teachers have instilled that it's not just about the dance, but how we are as human beings, how we treat one another, what we take away from the experience. And then we're like, oh my gosh, this is so wonderful. We're with friends mm-hmm. That we love. But the excellence is something I'll take with me, whether I'm not dancing, whether in school, you know, my personal life, relationships. And these little kids are wonderful and amazing. Just, I feel like it's instilled in us qualities to be a better human.
Mm-hmm. Now, your choreographer is saying you're going to be out on the stage, let's say just with 10 dancers, mm-hmm. and this is your role. Are you wanting that excellence for the rest of the dancers that are out there with you, or for the whole show?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I would say, I mean, we all hold ourselves to a very high standard. Mm-hmm. And it starts from, you know, the directors asking for that. And then, you know, as you grow as a dancer, you learn to ask that of yourself too, and you desire that excellence. And there's something really special about being on stage with other people and knowing, like, we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. Like, we are pursuing the same thing. We want to share, you know, in this instance, this gospel story as clearly as possible through our movement. And, you know, that intentionality as a team is really powerful.
You know, I should mention that, Wendy Miner owns Magnify Dance, and Magnify Dance Ensemble is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. You're putting on these very inspiring performances, Christmas Joy, which we've already mentioned, and now How Love Wins. And as a nonprofit, I'm sure that people can reach out and make donations because mm-hmm. you're carrying forward the gospel. Plus, you're just doing such amazing ministry with the kids. Here's something that I thought was very funny. When my daughter was dancing, her mom came from a cheerleading background.
Mm-hmm.
So having done that, she could do every hairdo known to humankind. And that is really a big requirement because there's costume changes and all yeah. kinds of things. And they were really super good at all of that. I mean, they could make a performer look totally different 30 seconds after they came off the stage.
Oh, yeah. You have no idea when you're in the audience what's happening backstage, but we're running around, we're changing costumes, we're changing our hair, our headpieces, our makeup. There's just a lot of busyness happening
and
behind the
talk to
the
about
scenes.
Your volunteers. You have volunteers helping. A lot of them are parents.
Majority are parents mm-hmm. with quick change, load in, load out, our stage crew, people who, you know, bring on the props, help with quick change, mm-hmm. watching all the, you know, all those 50 little angels. Those parents are watching them backstage and monitoring them. We have people who are part of the marketing. Pretty much all of our sections are run by parent volunteers.
And the National Hispanic Cultural Center is really a beautiful place to perform.
Oh, gorgeous. Yeah, we feel really lucky to be able to dance there. I mean, I've been able to dance in a lot of theaters, but this is one of my favorites. It's just a gorgeous venue.
Yeah, and it really is a community event.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have kids from all over the city that are taking dance lessons and performing in these performances.
Yeah, but I mean, just hearing Lauren talk about, you know, our parent volunteers just reminds me of it really is like a family a thing, and we just become a big family as we put on this show together. There's just such a community aspect of, you know, building the production.
Yeah, and you mentioned that How Love Wins was actually conceived back in 2014. Yeah. Is this the first year it's being performed in front of a large audience?
No, it's been performed
a
few times since. Yeah, so 2014 and then the few years following that. And then we took a break, COVID, and also just trying out some other different spring shows. But we've come back to this one. I think it's really a fan favorite for both our audiences and the families that participate.
Yeah, and I know that the music is a special time mm-hmm. with Christmas Joy, and I have not seen How Love Wins. How's the music for How Love Wins?
Oh, my gosh. It's powerful.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, a lot of our tracks come from an album made by various Christian artists that, again, just goes through, like, the gospel story of Jesus's birth, life, death, resurrection. Through different viewpoints of characters in the mm-hmm. Bible. And then another large portion of the show is part of the soundtrack from The Passion of the Christ. So really, I mean, if you've seen that movie or heard that music, it's incredibly powerful and touching. So that's what the story is.
Now, I have to give you a dad testimony.
Oh, great.
And I can only give you a perspective from Christmas Joy.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that my second child, my daughter Taylor, she tried basketball. Mm-hmm. She actually was a really good shooter. She tried volleyball. She tried some other things. But the ball thing was not something she enjoyed anywhere near as much as we took her to Christmas Joy. And I knew from the time she was 8 years old, Daddy, that is what I want to do. And so I went to all the rehearsals.
Wow.
You know, you have to drop your kids off when they're that young,
right,
obviously.
Yeah.
And what I was so impressed with as a parent is that the older ladies like yourselves, I don't want to call you old because you're both very young, but were so kind to the mm-hmm. little ones, and you grow them. That's kind of what you do. Mm-hmm. That's like a calling that you have. You don't just grow them as dancers, but you grow them as young women.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we also have, there's a sense of mentor program where we call, like, big sister, little sister. So at the beginning of our season, every older dancer, kind of our more senior members, as Lindsay had mentioned, gets paired with either one or two younger dancers. They share notes, share feelings, someone they can talk to, ask for help, any of that. And then it builds that community and family aspect. And then all of us as teachers have that community as well. Anybody could come to us, ask us for help when needed. And I feel like that's really a special part of our community, is that everybody can go to anybody and ask anything.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Lindsay DeCleva and Lauren Maddock with Magnify Dance Ensemble. They have a new show coming up April 9th. That's a Saturday, and Sunday the 10th, 2:00 in the afternoon, National Hispanic Cultural Center. It's called How Love Wins, and it's the continuing story of the ministry of Jesus after he was born. And of course, if you haven't seen how he was born in dance form, make sure you pay attention to when Christmas Joy comes up toward the end of this year. We'll be right back with these dancing ladies right after this.
On the go, here are some takeout takeaways. Hi, from Samaritan Ministries, I'm Doug Chamberlain with a family health checkup. The days are getting warmer, spring sports are beginning, and you simply don't feel like cooking. So, you might be grabbing takeout food more often. Well, here's some ways to keep it healthier, whether you're at your local eatery or hitting the drive-thru. Let's start with my favorite, pizza. Go with thin crust, half cheese, light on the meat, and heavy on the veggies. Opting for a burger? Well, replace the bun for a lettuce wrap or try a veggie burger. Rethink the toppings like cheese, bacon, and condiments. Choose baked over fried and wheat pasta or zoodles over the usual pasta. Have a side salad instead of fries. Request sauces and dressings be served on the side, and focus on veggies, even if that means packing your own bag of celery and carrots. For more, visit us on Facebook or at familyhealthcheckup.org.
Hi, I'm Todd Nettleton, and this is the Voice of the Martyrs Radio. Kabir and his family were attending church at a nearby village in India. Just as the service began, about 50 members of a Hindu extremist group interrupted. The extremists, known as Vishav Hindu Parishad, threatened to burn down the church. then called the police with false accusations against the pastor. Soon after the police arrived, Kabir's neighbor ran to the church to inform him that his house had been burned to the ground. Kabir and his 23 family members returned to their home and found it destroyed, along with their recently harvested crops and other belongings. Please pray for housing, food, and continued faith for all of Kabir's family.
I will not let my brothers and sisters suffer in silence, nor will I let them serve alone. To join me in prayer for persecuted Christians, go to vomradio.net.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700 or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Lindsay DeCleva and Lauren Maddock with Magnified Dance Ensemble are in studio. Ladies, magnifieddancecenter.com/ensemble. Your website says, we believe that educating dancers through training, collaborating, and performing at the utmost level of distinction and professionalism. And I just have to say, I mean, you start that from the time they start dancing. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we've got little 3-year-olds that, you know, they know how to stay in their line. They know how to watch their teacher, how to follow. I've had the privilege of teaching a lot of our primary classes this year, and it's kind of my first time diving into that and learning how to, do that training, because it takes a lot of knowledge in order to teach young children and teach them well. But, you know, our primary curriculum, it really instills exactly that, the training and, just the excellence. But we really just focus on like building their technique at that young age so that they're able to, you know, grow into dancers if that's what they choose to do.
Yeah. And as you said, Lauren, it carries over into other areas of your life.
Absolutely. You know, whether it's being able to listen or collaborate with other people, you know, you're in a class with 12 other kids, how to communicate with them, how to communicate with your teacher who's older than you, right, at your job or school. I think it's a huge, at least for me, been a huge helpful tool in taking my life outside of dance. Even family, friends, it builds you just as a human, your character, your collaboration, and instills excellence in your life all around.
What does it mean to study dance? I mean, as a lay person, non-dancer, and by the way, rhythmically challenged across the board, musically, dancing, you name it, I'm a spaz. So I would ask you, ballet, are there different pieces to ballet that you have to train in?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of different methods for training ballet, and so we use a specific method with our students, and so most of them study within this method. It's called Giacchetti, and they take exams, which again just enforces that discipline, and from a young age they're learning, they're memorizing, they're getting in front of examiners and showing what they've studied. And so that's a
big portion
of that.
I remember something right now that you just reminded me of. And that is, I was thinking that there's students maybe that have learning disabilities.
Mm.
But I remember some parents whose children were dancing with my daughter. And they said, my daughter experiences learning disabilities over here in school, but not when she's dancing.
Wow.
And it's because it's visual. It's intellectual. I mean, it's very physical. You have to be in great shape. And maybe it's just being able to look at the other dancers around you. But all of that is overcome.
Wow. That's really cool to
that's
hear.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, we love what we do for reasons like that, because it makes an impact in the lives of these kids and, empowers them to go forward with the rest of their lives. So I
guess I just have to ask, this discipline, this it's a rigorous deal to prepare for a show.
Yeah.
How Love Wins. I want our audience to appreciate when they go see How Love Wins, when they go see Christmas Joy, they're going to go, wow, this is not a little kid's performance. This is
all a
highly professional dance ensemble. And you just happen to be using young dancers all the way through high school age. Yeah. And then, like yourselves, both a little bit older, and you get to do some featured parts and some fun things that I'm sure the little girls look at you both in awe, don't they?
Yeah, it's kind of wild to be on that side of it, because, you know, when you're growing up, you look at the big girls, if you will, and the ones that have been dancing for longer than you, and you admire them and you want to be like that. And so it's a really surreal experience to be on the other side of that, and to get to be the mentor, to get to be the one that is, you know, kind of helping teach them and grow them.
Here's one out of left field, not on my list.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm trapping you here, but I'm thinking that I've heard about discipline in football. Mm-hmm. I've heard about discipline in basketball, and I've seen coaches yelling at kids. Never have I ever seen anything like that happening with your dancers or anything else. I mean, you get people to perform at such a high level, and it's almost like they're just motivated internally to get it done.
That's a really neat observation. I think the ballet world in general, the dance world in general, has, you know, maybe a not so great reputation of being pretty harsh, and there is a lot of that kind of, you know, motivation that maybe isn't as good or isn't as healthy for the individual. But that's one of the things I love about Magnify, is that just the culture, the community, the people that we have. There's a lot of love, and there's a lot of just encouragement. And, you know, we've, I think, learned how to motivate and how to encourage our students in a way that is, again, empowering to them, and does kind of foster that that inward sense of drive, for sure.
What do you hope for your dancers as they go through your program?
I think for them, actually taking off what Lindsay said, is that they're able to expect from us that sense of community and building up them as human beings. And then from them, you know, we expect the same in return, you know, treating their friends, treating their community the same, and realizing that, you know, we don't expect any less. We're not going to accept that, you know, toxic or anything like that, but rather building each other up for whether if someone chooses that dance maybe isn't their path anymore, or whether they're maybe not even Christian, that they're able to express and just love dance for what it is and for who they are, is what we expect from them. Just take them as they are.
Yeah. What's neat is that you don't have any faith requirements, but I'm sure that your faith and the story that you are portraying has a lot of effect on your dancers in a positive way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, certainly. I think, you know, it's hard to, you can't tell a story like this. You can't tell the gospel without having, you know, an impact in your heart and your life. So it's a special thing.
How has Albuquerque responded to your performances?
I mean, we've gotten a lot of positive feedback. I think, you know, I think the city is really in need, and I think there's a lot of people that are hungry for the gospel, and seeing it in this way, this visual representation, is a new and different thing. And so I'm really hoping that, you know, word will get out and people will come and see, because, you know, there really is nothing like the story of this love.
We should mention that How Love Wins is a show coming up April 9th and 10th. That's a Saturday and a Sunday, 2 o'clock p.m. afternoon matinee shows. Tickets are available at the National Hispanic Cultural Center box office at nhccnm.org, or by calling 505-724-4771. And what if you've got a group of people that want to go see it? You get even get discounts for group tickets.
Yep, we've got discounts for group tickets, for students, and for seniors. So hopefully that can help a lot of people to come and see the show.
What do you both want for your audience that comes to see you perform?
Oh, wow. I think just first, you know, seeing the professionalism that our company exudes, whether you want to put your child in dance or maybe your child's been wanting to. We've had a lot of kids come and be inspired by our dancers and then join. But then, of course...
That was kind of your story.
Yeah, totally. I started dancing when I was younger but didn't join into Christmas Joy until I had went and seen it. Totally inspired. I actually saw Lindsay in the performance when I was there.
Special.
And then joined the next year, and now it's like, how was I ever not a part of this, you know? So hopefully someone is inspired in that way. We've had people come where their lives are changed. Maybe they've never even heard of the gospel, and they're touched, or they want more information about it and mm-hmm. change their life for good. Yeah. And then, of course, just even if you're not a believer, just seeing the professionalism of dance and what we do with these young kids is really, really special.
Talk about the art for a minute. I mean, this is art.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the way I watch your movements, and not only are they in sync with all the other dancers on the floor, but they just are beautiful and they flow, and that's part of the study. And the work that you put in.
It is. It takes a lot of work. So what you see on the stage, there's been hundreds upon thousands of hours spent in studio rehearsing. And, you know, just a glimpse of our students' lives. Like they, you know, they train all fall. They do Christmas Joy. They train all spring. They do Isle of Wands. A lot of them participate in summer intensives or workshops during the summer to continue their training. So they are hard at work, and it's hours of class. And, you know, we were talking briefly before about just you can't just pop into a rehearsal and expect the movement to happen. You know, you've got to take class. You've got to hone your technique. You have to cross train with, you know, strengthening and stretching exercises. And so there's a lot that goes into what is ultimately presented on the stage.
And then, of course, they're also doing school, you know, so these kids are,
they're amazing.
If they didn't really love it, and I don't think they would be doing it. They ask a lot of themselves to do this for sure. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Lindsay and Lauren, thank you both so much for joining us today. One more time, we'll let you know the new show presented by Magnified Dance Ensemble. They are a 501c3 organization. They are presenting How Love Wins on Saturday, April 9th and Sunday, April 10th, 2 o'clock p.m. at the National Hispanic Cultural Center. Tickets are available at the National Hispanic Cultural Center box office or online at nhccnm.org, or you can call 505-724-4771. Lindsay and Lauren, thank you for joining us today on ABQ Connect.
Thank you.
We're going to be back with Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates, right after these messages. Stay with us.
Mercy Me. Inhale, exhale.
Hey, everybody, this is Bart Millard, and we are so excited to continue our Inhale Exhale tour this spring 2022.
Mercy Me, March 24th in Rio Rancho at Rio Rancho Event Center with Andrew Rip
and Ren Collective.
One night to be encouraged again. Tickets available now at mercyme.org.
It's time that we all get out of the house. Let's go.
Mercy Me, Inhale Exhale.
It's going to be a whole lot of fun. Get more info at mercyme.org.
This Easter Sunday, celebrate the greatest demonstration of God's love, the death and resurrection of His Son, Jesus. New Mexico's biggest Easter sunrise service is back at UNM Stadium. Together, we'll worship with special guest Jordan St. Cyr. Plus, hear a Bible-based message of hope from Pastor Skip Heitzig.
Jesus didn't die for his own sin. He had none. He was the only perfect person who ever lived. He lived a sinless life, utterly and completely. No, he substituted for you and for me.
Church starts Easter morning at 7:30 a.m. at UNM Stadium.
Because without the resurrection, Paul said, our faith is empty. And we are still dead in our sins.
Find out more at EasterABQ.com.
Albuquerque Christian School is New Mexico's leading choice for pre-K and elementary education. Looking to get your child ahead of the crowd? Albuquerque Christian School boasts a strong language arts program that gets our students reading before they even start kindergarten. Albuquerque Christian School offers courses such as coding, robotics, and home ec, which complement and enhance our core subjects. Albuquerque Christian School classes are not overcrowded, giving your child the attention they deserve. Looking for valuable life experiences? Albuquerque Christian School is deeply involved in the community with a number of community projects and initiatives throughout each school year. Albuquerque Christian School is having an open house on Saturday, March 12th from 12 to 2. That's Saturday, March 12th from 12 to 2 p.m. Visit acsrams.org for more information or to apply. acsrams.org. That's acsrams.org.
Biblical Insights from Harvest with Pastor Greg Laurie.
What are you looking forward to the most when you get to heaven? Carly writes, I'm looking forward to seeing my baby girl, Emily. In April of 2020, I was 40 weeks pregnant when we found out sweet Emma no longer had a heartbeat. due to her umbilical cord accident. I was induced and she was born the next morning. We had to say hello and goodbye for now to our firstborn daughter that day. Heaven now feels so much closer. I can't wait to hear Emma say, Mama, for the first time. It's true, when you have a loved one that's close to you die, heaven is closer, isn't it? And we really will one day live happily ever after.
Impact your world with the gospel by knowing God and making Him known. Connect with Pastor Greg Laurie and sign up to receive his free daily devotion emails. To get started, visit harvest.org today.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect. We're with Brian Cochran, the owner and president of John Moore Associates. He's also a certified kingdom builder. Brian, welcome to ABQ Connect.
Hey, Jim.
Brian, I hope things are going well with you, but it's kind of a roller coaster ride in the investment markets over the last 10 days since we last spoke.
Yeah, we've had a lot of uncertainty basically since the year started. It has not stopped. It seems like every time we get a little bit of good news, it's offset by some more bad news. So we've had a bumpy road.
Brian, I think there's people out there that are marketing so-called investments that are really stable and you can't lose money. Is that something that is really true, or is that just a marketing thing considering people are nervous about what the markets are doing today?
Yeah, so there's always a pitch when there's market volatility. There's a big sales pitch for things that are guaranteed. But there's a natural relationship in the investment world of risk and return. And there's really no way to have your cake and eat it too. You know, yeah. If you're going to have the low risk, you're going to have to sacrifice return. And so for investors that need or want a higher growth rate over the long term, you just have to learn to accept and actually expect the kind of volatility we've had here so far to start 2022.
And so you would really categorize the volatility in 2022 as normal?
Yes. It's not fun. It's not comfortable. But it is what we would consider normal. What is not normal is what we experienced in 2021, which was a market that just seemed to march higher and higher with almost no interruption, no downside. In fact, Jim, we had 70 days last year that hit new market highs. That's just really unusual. And so what we're seeing this year with starting the year with a 10 to 15% market drop is actually a pretty normal market event that we just hadn't seen in a while.
Mm. And Brian, I know that there's a lot of people that have put, bonds and different things that they've bought that are paying a much lower return than maybe you would earn in the stock market. And now that there's been some changes in the bond market, people might be concerned that they're in those investments for too long.
Right. The bond market is often seen as a place for safe investment, but something people don't always address is that the bond market is equally as unpredictable and complex as the stock market. There's just as many forces that move the bond market that are, you know, again, unpredictable. And so what we're seeing right now is there's been some significant shifts in the bond market, just like the stock market, as bond investors sort of digest news from the Federal Reserve and try to understand inflation and all these macroeconomic changes, not to mention the risk factors of something like what's happening in Ukraine right now and the uncertainty that that breeds. So you've had all these market forces pulling at the bond market, just like the stock market. And as a result, where we've landed so far as we're talking today is that interest rates are meaningfully higher than they were a year ago, which for bond investors means they've lost money in the short term. But what it means for new investors in the bond market is you're getting more interest on the bonds that you buy today than we've seen in the last 2 years. So our expectations in bonds are changing. And they're actually maybe a more attractive part of your portfolio now than they've been in a while.
Nice. Brian, you always have a biblical viewpoint, but you've taught us it's important to view the markets relative to long-term averages. But talk to us about the long-term averages, but also help us to understand how people can invest with a biblical perspective.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the biblical part because that's really the foundation. And there's a couple principles we draw from there. One is diversification. You know, Solomon in his wisdom said to, you know, spread your grain upon the water. He would send out multiple ships when delivering goods because he didn't know what would happen. And so when we invest, one of the key things is diversification. And I think one of the ways that some investors are being hit really hard right now is they maybe overextended themselves or were not diversified. If you, all you invested in the last year was high growth stocks, for example, some of the really hot names that were getting headlines, those stocks have been the hardest hit now that the market's in correction. But a diversified investor is probably right now seeing much less loss in their portfolio and therefore much less fear and uncertainty. So diversification is actually a biblical principle. The other biblical principle is to fear not. You know, almost every time you see fear in the Bible, it's, you know, paired with the word not. You should not fear. And so we're supposed to live in confidence. We're supposed to live without fear. And when you look at the markets, it's really easy to be fearful in times of uncertainty. So one of our big roles with clients right now is just talking them off the ledge constantly, not to make bad, rash decisions because they're feeling fear with the headlines they're seeing or the changes in the investment markets. So those are two key principles. And really maybe the third that's an overarching principle about money from a biblical point of view is that we're not supposed to put our faith in money. And money is competition for Jesus' place in our hearts. And so if all of your self-worth, if all of your confidence is based around money, and therefore maybe attached to growth of your money and what you can do there, and you've been attached to greed and a reliance on wealth, then that's going to make you more susceptible to being emotional and making bad decisions at a time like this versus a lot of our strong Christian clients. They trust in our investment processes, but more importantly, they trust in the confidence that God is there to provide for them. And they may not get everything they ever want, but God's there to take care of their needs. And that confidence just instilled a whole different perspective around money, spending, debt, investing. Every part of their financial lives is influenced by that eternal perspective and that trust in God. That doesn't mean we can just be frivolous with our money and say, hey, God will take care of it. We still need to be wise stewards. But it does change your attitude.
And
that's a big part.
Yes, and you frequently talk about biblical perspectives in all that you do. JohnMoore.com, you have some free resources for our listeners, and they can go to your site and listen to those on demand.
Absolutely, and I'm really excited. We just posted a rather long video, longer than what we usually post, which was the recording from our favorite economist that comes and speaks with our clients periodically. He came and spoke at an event we hosted in Arizona. And we recorded his full content, his full presentation, and he talks about some of what's happening today in the markets. And what we love about this particular economist, his name is Fritz Meyer, based out of Colorado. He does a really good job framing what's happening today, what are you seeing in the news versus what's true, and then also what can we learn from history. And just does it with no political objective, no investment, sales pitch. He's just giving great information. So if you feel like you don't understand what's happening in the markets or you just want some basic understanding, jump on that insights page on johnmoore.com, and the most recent post on there is the video of Fritz Meyer. He just does a fabulous job.
Yeah, and Brian, I don't mean to ambush you with this question, but I've had a number of listeners email me about this in the past couple of weeks, and it's all related to oil and gas. And their question really is, would it be possible for the United States just to start providing the needs of the United States? I know we were energy dependent a couple of years ago. Could the United States set a price for oil and gas for Americans so that we're not paying $4.25 at the pump?
The potential is there. I think that's the short answer. What I like to look at in terms of are we at our maximum potential in terms of oil production is the rig count. And you can just Google, you know, U.S. rig count, and you can see these numbers for yourself. Right now, the rig count's about 520. What that means is there's about 520 active oil rigs in the U.S. that are out there drilling, producing oil. To give you an idea where that sits long term, is that number pre-COVID was about 680. So we're certainly not at our maximum capacity for energy production. And there's so many benefits to doing that. There's the economic freedom of that. There's the job opportunities and production. And one of the things you've got to understand is we have some of the best environmental regulations on oil production. So if someone's going to produce oil somewhere, if we acknowledge that oil is a necessary commodity, why not produce it here where, you know, we're going to have the better environmental protections than some other countries, and we can satisfy our own needs with money that's going into other Americans' pockets. And to give you an idea of the potential there, that rig count back in 2019 reached as high as 880. And we're at currently 520. So some more pro-energy policies, some incentives for oil production would make sense. But that's not a light switch we can flip on and off. You know, there's investments and leases these oil producers have to acquire either on public or private land. So if we start now, we can probably increase production for, you know, several months from now. But unfortunately, the policies we've seen recently and the economic hit that energy companies took during COVID and all those shutdowns has made it hard for them to climb back and get back to that full speed production.
And Brian, correct me if I'm wrong. Actually, I don't even know that I can make a statement about this because I don't know if I understand the way oil is priced as a commodity worldwide. But I'm looking at the internet right now and I'm seeing that crude's up trading up over $102 a barrel. So I'm confused that even if we were to produce X amount of oil, we would still be buying it at the market price, right? Instead of a discount to all Americans. I guess that sounds like a silly question, but that's what I have for you.
Yeah. Well, theoretically, what would happen is if we could increase that production, you start to look at the supply demand economics. So if we can create more supply and basically replace the supply that was taken offline by all the punitive economic actions against Russia. That's really what's happened here is the Russian supply is offline. You know, so if we can increase supply, we can decrease the prices. And so that's the opportunity for a domestic energy producer is, you know, any oil they can sell today, they can get over $100 a barrel in general. But if we can get that supply up, maybe that drops the prices, but still remains profitable for those producers. So you still get the jobs. You still get the tax revenues for a state like New Mexico. You know, we get to keep that production domestically where it's more environmentally friendly and more impactful for us as Americans. And we can drop the prices so that what you pay at the pump starts to decline. So it's all wins, unless you're anti-oil and you want everything to move to green energy. Then you wouldn't consider that a benefit.
Yeah. Brian, tell us a little bit about you and your career. When did you first get interested in investing and helping people make money decisions?
Yeah, so I came into the finance world in 2006. So I got in just enough to learn the ropes and then get hit by 2008. So I've learned a lot early in my career. And I really came into the industry more from the planning perspective. Our founder of our firm, John Moore, really came in from the investing perspective. So he built the investment processes that our team uses today. And my interest in investing really came secondary to my passion for planning and helping people make wise decisions, wise stewardship decisions with what God shared with them. So, and I still think, you know, today that the plan is a good place to start. You know, you really shouldn't start investing until you know what you're investing for. And the why of your investments, that's a good place to start. And from there, we can make better investment decisions as to how much risk you'll take, you know, what your timelines are, what types of investment vehicles like IRAs or annuities or Roth IRAs, you know, what's the best vehicle to invest through. And that's been really fun just to be in this very dynamic industry over the last 15 years or so and see it evolve and help so many families try to make better decisions.
Brian, how early should you start saving? I mean, is this something a 16-year-old ought to develop a habit doing?
You know, that's a really a good question. One thing we tell our clients when they have young is to do everything they can to first exhibit good financial practices. So we like to say more is caught than taught. So those kids will simply absorb what their parents are doing, which means you need to start talking about money. So you can explain to the kids, you know, just a high level, you know, for every dollar that mom and dad earn, you know, we're putting 10 cents in our savings for the future, because you don't know what the future may hold. And we know that our future selves need that money. Explain why you save and how you save, you know, without getting the technicals. And then when the kids start to get their own money, you can encourage good saving by helping them set up a savings account and doing things like that. So you really can't start too early. My kids are 11 and 13. They both have retirement accounts already. They both have savings accounts that are, you know, pretty good size, because they both enjoy seeing their savings grow. And then the hard part a lot of times with young people is starting to teach the principles of giving. So kids don't have a lot of money usually, so the thought of giving some of it away can be hard. But it's a great habit to start young, to instill that joy of generosity and let them kind of catch that generosity bug before they go out and set their careers. So I'd also encourage you, if your kids are getting money, to talk about causes they want to support. And that's something we've done in our family, is as my wife and I do our own giving, we often talk to our kids about it. You know, where are we giving? Why are we giving there? How is that gift going to impact others? And start getting them thinking about the giving portion of their, you know, their own financial journey.
Brian, have you seen clients, because of the volatility in the market, slow down giving?
Not yet, but I think it's coming. What typically happens is people won't change their behaviors too much until there's more of a lengthy market decline. So if this market does not recover, I'd say in the next 3 to 6 months, you might see it start to impact giving. Part of how a market decline affects our clients' giving is we teach them to get out of their assets. So what they've accumulated in their investment accounts is often a source of gifts. So if that money's declining, they may feel inclined to give less. But in general, right now, we've seen a continued high rate of giving, and it's been really fun to see people continue to step up. And believers often see what's happening in the world. They see the problems. Rather than hide from those problems, they lean into them. So we've had clients that are actively giving to, you know, relief efforts around the Ukraine, for example.
With that statement, Brian, I know that there's false information. There's organizations out there asking for money. How do you find out if a charitable organization is really legit and that your money's going where you want it to go?
Yeah, that's a great question. Especially if you're making large gifts, we encourage going deeper with fewer, meaning that rather than spreading your gifts amongst 10, 15, 20 charities, really find a few that you can be very confident in and give to those. And which means you have to say no probably to a lot of the other good opportunities, so that you can say yes to great opportunities that you really believe in. And certainly, especially if you're, you know, in the ministry world in Albuquerque, there's so many good charities, but you have to decide which ones are great. One way we do that is we recommend people really start to build a relationship with a charity before doing significant gifts. There are resources like Charity Navigator, where you can go online and they have some metrics for rating charities. You can go online and find the financial reports for charity to see how much they receive in gifts and then how much goes towards salaries and other expenses. But we really believe in a relationship where you get their newsletters, where you meet the key leaders and understand their heart. Look at their vision statement, their mission statement. Ask about impact. And ask a simple question. If I were to give you X dollars, $5,000, $10,000, whatever you're thinking of donating, or $500, can you tell me where that would go and what the impact would be? You know, and most nonprofits are more than happy to have that conversation.
Yeah, they actually, in most cases, appreciate the conversation, because they go, they're not being compelled to be compliant and to be open. That's something that they want to do. They don't. It's not a legal mandate. It's something in their heart that they want to tell people about.
And I think most good nonprofits consider themselves to be in partnership with their donors. So why would you not share your part, you know, share your progress and your opportunities with your partner? And the more you can build that relationship, the more enthusiastic you might become as a donor. So it's a win-win. But we really enjoy that. One of the ways we help expose our clients to nonprofits is when we do annual education events, we invite a local nonprofit that requires, you know, gifts from the community to survive. we'll invite those organizations, one each year, to come and present to our clients and give a short explanation of what they're doing in the community. And then we offer a matching gift as an encouragement for clients to support that organization. And we've had clients that were first exposed to an organization in that event that end up being board members or volunteers or long-term donors. So we're always trying to highlight some of the great work that nonprofits around New Mexico are doing.
Well, and I know one example myself was a couple years ago, you made a nice gift to Feed New Mexico Kids and all that they're doing throughout New Mexico to make sure kids have food for the weekend. So that was really an incredible thing that your office did for that charity.
Yeah, and that was one that really touched a lot of our clients' hearts. Because Feed New Mexico Kids is so under the radar, a lot of times people didn't know about them. But that's a good example. We had one client that's now extremely involved with Feed New Mexico Kids, helping move the needle with that great organization. And the matching gift is just sort of an extra boost to that organization. But we hope that it becomes ongoing gifts and just ongoing awareness of what's going on, so people find out about the needs in the community and then who's meeting those needs. It's been a blast. And we actually this year at our Arizona education event, we had an organization that is extremely similar to Feed New Mexico Kids that's doing the same kind of work in Arizona. And we had a great response as people were, again, not aware of that specific need in the way that they were fulfilling it. And we had a great outpouring of generosity. So it's one of the most fun things we get to do.
Yeah. And Brian, as you mentioned, you know, volatility in the markets, a lot of that's being caused by what's going on in the Ukraine and people worried about the outcomes in Eastern Europe. But at the same time that's happening, I see more and more commercials about how you can bring relief to the people of Ukraine. And sometimes I just question some of the ads that you see on late night television, especially.
Right. And I think as a believer, it's good to look for organizations that are not only providing the food, the shelter, the medical care, but also are bringing the word to these people in crisis. So sometimes those national organizations are doing great work, but they don't maybe get that extra step that we look at as believers of not just meeting people's basic needs, but meeting their most important need, which is to build that relationship with their Savior. So there's great organizations out there that you may not know about and don't get the big national attention that are, you know, representing those needs from a biblical worldview and sharing their faith along the way.
Yeah. Brian, make that statement again about what you're teaching your kids is many times not taught, it's caught. I'm especially interested in that as, let's say you go to church, you've got a 10-year-old, maybe that check, you go have them put it in the offering plate or in the agape box instead of you doing it.
Yeah. More is certainly caught than taught. And I know that with my kids because a lot of times they repeat the things I say and I cringe. So they point out my own flaws, but any involvement with the giving. And then I think the best way to do that is ask questions. You know, what do you think about the giving that we do? Mm-hmm. You know, what else could we do with the gifts we made? I had that conversation with my kids recently. One of my kids, both now actually have the opportunity to play in some club basketball, and that's not the cheapest thing to do. So some of the families we're around have significantly more resources than we have, and they make sure you know it. They have really fancy cars. They talk about their fancy vacations, things that we are not spending money on. And I asked my kids one time, I said, we're not judging those people, but, you know, what giving opportunities do you think they might have if their eyes were opened up to the needs of the world and they had a heart for giving? And, you know, what do you think about the fact that we could have a vehicle like they drive or go on the trips they go on, but we give instead? And making that balance between spending and giving. And those kinds of conversations get the kids thinking because kids like nice things, just like adults. And they need to understand the trade-offs and the sacrifices you might make to be generous and how that actually ends up being more rewarding in some ways.
Brian, always blessed by spending time with you. And we thank you so much for all your contributions to ABQ Connect and KLYT Radio. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, always my pleasure, Jim.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.